This is Morgan Beatty speaking. I'll be back in a moment with news of the day.
It's a long, long way from Brooklyn to Belgium, or from Long Island to the warlocked islands of the South and Central Pacific. And it's going to take time for the Christmas gifts you send to those you love to reach them. That's why this year, Christmas gift packages must be mailed before October 15th, preferably before the end of September, to all men and women of the armed forces who are outside the country. And remember these two additional points. First, wrap your packages securely in good, strong boxes. And secondly, address your packages correctly, completely, and clearly, and label each Christmas gift parcel. Christmas will be a sad day unless those packages arrive, and arrive on time. Now from Washington, here is Morgan Beatty.
The sum total of some rather confusing battle dispatches today, plus a report by Prime Minister Churchill to the House of Commons, gives us this overall picture of the war in the West. First, the Allied forces gambled that our momentum through France would carry us up to and through or around the Siegfried Line. It was a sensible gamble, and we must remember that all warfare is risked, and it all but succeeded. But the fact remains that we have failed in this particular gamble. We did not flank the Siegfried Line in the north, but it was an heroic and glorious attempt, no doubt of that. Neither have we punched any sizable holes in the German defense system in front of the Rhine anywhere along the line, although we have achieved platforms within those defenses for the next forward move. Second, in the overall picture in the West, in the last 10 days, while our spearhead attacks have not wholly succeeded anywhere, we have at the same time built up formidable offensive power, and that power already is being sent against the Siegfried Line in another bold effort to cut short the war. Nazi reports emphasize the fact that the British Second Army, the American First, Third, and Seventh Armies all are lunging at the German defense system in ever-increasing waves. Anglo-American reports, while they do not bear this out entirely, do show that we are making strong, probing attacks into the Siegfried system, and we are holding tenaciously to that bridgehead over the main Rhine River at Nijmegen in Holland. Those are the two most important conclusions to reach on the basis of many news dispatches we have from the Western Front today, conclusions that Prime Minister Winston Churchill might well have pointed up more vividly in his report to Commons. His report, of course, was the usual Churchill analysis for the most part, clear and understandable, except for the omission we note, and except for the fact that he indicated the Allied governments were operating more closely together than ever. This is clearly not the case. Every dispatch we receive these days indicates too much jockeying in all three capitals, Moscow, London, and Washington. The Soviet information bulletin issued by the Russian embassy here in Washington today, for example, says that Russia's influence in the post-war settlement furnishes the best guarantee that Adolf Hitler will not escape punishment after this war, as the Kaiser did in the last war. That would seem to be an indication that Soviet thought is now claiming a corner on common sense and practical peace planning. It would indicate that the Soviet authorities would really clean up Germany once they got inside. Now, Premier Stalin has not indicated anything of the sort. On the contrary, he would not, according to his latest utterances on this point, he would not split up Germany, nor would he demilitarize Germany. As for American aims, here in Washington today, Secretary of State Hull disclosed that neutral nations had been warned that they would lose American friendship for years to come should they give sanctuary to Hitler or any other Axis leaders after the war. Perhaps this jockeying period between London, Moscow, and Washington is about to come to an end, and more common sense in all three capitals in high places will show itself. But now for the rest of the Prime Minister's report to Commons. Mr. Churchill warned the House that the war might still continue into 1945, even though the Germans have lost close to 1 million men in the Battle of France and the Low Countries. He advocated a new three-power meeting between himself and Messrs. Roosevelt and Stalin before peace plans could be disclosed publicly. And here are his other most important points. Perhaps 200,000 Germans are now trapped in Holland, and their capture or destruction appears highly probable. Incidentally, there are few military appraisers who will agree with his optimism on this point. He reveals that German losses in the West since D-Day are 400,000 killed and wounded, plus 500,000 prisoners. Allied losses in the same period, he says, now stand at 90,000 British and 145,000 Americans killed, wounded, or missing. Allied troops now in France number between 2 and 3 million. Americans outnumber the British by a ratio of 3-2 overall. As for strictly fighting units, there are 5.5 United States fighting divisions to 4 British divisions in Western Europe. The Prime Minister says that complete agreement was reached on every point in his meeting with Mr. Roosevelt at Quebec, and that the offer of British help in the war against Japan was cordially accepted by the United States. He says England will support Russia in her demands for territorial changes in the Polish frontier to give Russia the security she is entitled to have. He also adds that he expects Poland to emerge as an independent state. By the way, it's taken the British government 2 years to face the realities of that situation. On the Pacific front today, our forces continued to mop up Peleliu in the Palau Islands, and the British report the sinking of 32 Japanese ships in East Indian areas. On the home front, the War Food Administration has released all farm machinery and equipment except corn pickers from rationing and distribution controls. This announcement was made only 12 hours after a War Production Board spokesman had said the end of rationing of such equipment would be astounding. Farm machinery, in the view of the board, is one of the most critical of items. This sort of thing doesn't seem to make much sense, does it? And here are a couple of stories we thought you'd like. One is dated with the American troops in Alsace-Lorraine. It says the soldiers of one frontier fighting regiment got word yesterday that the USO was going to put on the best show of the season in an old abandoned factory 2 miles back of the battle line. The whole regiment showed up for the entertainment. And sure enough, there was that big name standing up there in person. He sang one of the songs that made him famous and was starting on a second one when the word came that the Germans were about to attack. The whole regiment, sore as so many boiled owls, trooped out of the building and went into battle. For the first time in his adult life, Bing Crosby found himself singing to an empty house. And this one comes from Wimbledon, North Dakota, sort of a social item. Mr. and Mrs. Fred Etter and their daughter Louise took time out of their farm work to attend a civic celebration in their honor. Louise operates a combine on the farm, her father drives a truck, and Mrs. Etter manages the house and the barns. Between them, they have just harvested the crop off 320 acres. And why is this news? Mr. Etter is 91 years old, Mrs. Etter is 81, and daughter Louise, well, she runs that combine at the tender age of 54. Now your announcer. I'll be back in exactly 60 seconds.
This year, millions of Americans will spend Christmas overseas. American boys and girls who, until the war, had always spent that day of days at home with their families. Well, we can't bring those men and women of the armed forces back for this December 25th, but we can and must do our best to see that Christmas is somehow brought to them, that they receive gifts from home which will keep fresh in their hearts what Christmas at home was and what it again will be. It's important, then, to avoid making the mistakes which were made last year, mistakes which resulted in thousands of overseas Christmas gift packages never arriving, or, at best, getting to their destinations hopelessly late. There are three important things to keep in mind. One, wrap your packages securely in good, strong boxes. Two, address your packages correctly, completely, and clearly, and label each Christmas gift parcel. And thirdly, mail your packages early. October 15th is the latest mailing date. Once again, here is Morgan Beatty.
Under the news code developed over the years, a news story should always answer 6 questions in the listener's mind. It must tell who, what, when, where, how, and why about any given event. Today we're concerned with the why of news reporting because we have with us here in the Navy NBC studio a distinguished guest who practices the why of news. He's Rear Admiral A.S. Merrill, USN, Director of Public Relations for the Navy here in Washington. Rear Admiral Merrill knows his Pacific War. Under Admiral Halsey, the grand old man of the fleet, he made news in the Solomons campaign, some of the greatest news of our day. But here he is. How did that Solomons campaign work out, Admiral?
It worked out all right, Mr. Beatty, thanks to Admiral Halsey and our sailors and Marines and Army. Problem was to make the Japanese think we had more ships than we actually had. So Admiral Halsey sent me to bombard the airfields of northern Bougainville during the night, then race 180 miles at maximum speed to the other end for a daylight bombardment and personal appearance. The Japanese thought my force was 2 task forces. Then that night we ran into an engagement with an enemy task force, 2 heavy cruisers, 2 light cruisers, and 8 destroyers. We had only light cruisers, but the 3 hours' battle cost the enemy 5 ships. We spent the next day covering our landings in Empress Augusta Bay. In the course of that operation, 67 Japanese dive bombers jumped us. We never lost a ship, although one cripple had to be towed to base. Then that night we escorted the second echelon of transports into Empress Augusta Bay.
That was as busy a 48-hour period as any Navy ever knew, I suppose. But, Admiral, it's different out there now, isn't it? With the 3rd and the 5th fleets on hand, we've got a couple of navies ready for the Japanese in the battles to come.
Yes, we have. But that's exactly the reason why, as public relations officer for the Navy, I accepted your invitation to talk to the NBC audience today.
How do you mean, sir?
I mean that we in the Navy believe that the American people do not fully understand the difficulties of war in the Pacific, the reasons why even our present great naval strength is not enough. It's in order to improve understanding of these tremendous problems facing us that we've expanded so greatly our news facilities in the far Pacific.
You mean expanded them just to bring back the news as it develops?
Basically, that's the idea. One great stride forward was made on D-Day in Europe. We lent the broadcasting companies our film recording equipment and sent men, the broadcasting company's own men, to the battle scene. Recordings were flown back to London. You know the rest of the story. Some of the most vivid reporting of all time was the result. We're now preparing to bring the Pacific War just as close, if not closer, to people here at home. We're building transmitting equipment on remote bases so correspondents will be able to get their recordings back to the United States almost instantly. We've actually broken radio silence recently to permit radio reporters to broadcast from ships engaged in fights with the enemy.
That sounds like real progress for the broadcasters. Does it help radio only?
Not at all. We are using this same equipment to speed press messages and radio photographs, too. As the war progresses in the Pacific, the coverage will go right with it. Public here at home will get a more complete and a clearer picture of events, of distances, of battles, and logistics.
There's that word, logistics, again. That's the business of getting the men and the materials out to the fighting fronts, isn't it? Is that one of the factors you had in mind, Admiral, when you said earlier that we had tremendous problems facing us?
Yes, it is, Mr. Beatty. We have to make it clear that the supply problem is just about as tough as anything you can imagine. The Japanese fleet seems afraid to come out and fight, but we've got to be ready for it in case we can lure it into action. And even if it stays in hiding all the way through the war, we've still got to carry the war to the Japanese army. That means eventually reaching the Asiatic mainland with strong forces. And that means covering at best a 10,000-mile haul.
A 10,000-mile haul. That is a long way to transport men and equipment, and at the same time keep a great fleet ready for a possible showdown.
You bet it is. Each jump farther west multiplies our supply problem. If it takes, let's say, 200 ships flying back and forth steadily to supply the farthest base today, and we establish a new base farther west by half that distance, we must have 50% more ships to maintain the new base. That means we'll need 300 ships instead of 200.
And that's got to happen before you strike a blow.
Exactly. And that's why we want to bring the American public as clear and complete a picture as possible as the war develops in the Pacific. We want them to know why they'll have to stick with us to win the war in the Pacific.
And that's the why of the news from the Navy's point of view. Thank you, Admiral Merrill. Once again, I think we're fortunate in having at the head of the Navy's public relations a man who has made flaming headlines of victory, a man who understands the war in the Pacific, a man who has kept up the spirit of the offensive when the going was toughest. We're here to help you report the news, sir. NBC's correspondents are with the task forces on advanced bases. We believe the American public will stick, too. That's all for now, and thank you. I'll be back at this same time tomorrow.
Last year, thousands and thousands of Christmas gift packages for our men and women in the armed forces overseas could not be delivered or arrived hopelessly late, all because the people who sent them didn't follow instructions issued by the Army and Navy. Well, let's don't let that happen again this year. The instructions are simple, and here they are. 1. Wrap your packages securely in good, strong boxes, not more than 5 pounds in weight, 15 inches in length or 36 inches in length and girth combined. 2. Address your packages correctly, completely, and clearly, and label each Christmas gift parcel. And 3. Mail your packages early. October 15th is the latest mailing date. Morgan Beatty is heard Monday through Friday. Tomorrow at this time, keep up with the news with Morgan Beatty. This is the National Broadcasting Company.